Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, our Capitol Report brings you the latest troubling findings in investigations into President Donald Trump and his top advisors. Then from Public News Service, hear about a possible government shutdown and the resignation of controversial Interior Department Secretary Ryan Zinke. In local news, hear about El Cajon's climate action efforts, a makeover of Mast Park in Santee, and energy issues in the winds out in Campo and Boulevard. Our creative team has put together a special East County edition of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and we'll be reading that later on today on our show. And finally, this holiday week, we'll end our show with a performance of Vivaldi's Gloria by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. And from all of us to all of you, we wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. Today we bring you the latest developments in the widening investigations into President Donald Trump and his top advisors. President Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, has been sentenced to 3 years in prison after pleading guilty to crimes, including felonies that he says Donald Trump ordered him to commit in order to hide alleged affairs. Cohen also provided evidence that the president was actively negotiating with Russia on business dealings during the campaign, contrary to what the president told voters, the New York Times reports. Cohen pleaded guilty to crimes filed under two separate cases, one by U.S. Justice Department prosecutors in New York and the other by Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller. While Mueller recommended leniency for Cohen due to his cooperation with the probe into illegal election interference, federal prosecutors in New York indicate Cohen was uncooperative in their investigations. But federal investigators didn't have to rely solely on Cohen's testimony, since they also seized computers and other records from Cohen's office, including tape recordings. In court, Cohen said of Trump, "I felt it was my duty to cover up his dirty deeds. He apologized to the American people and said his loyalty to Trump led me to choose a path of darkness over light," in his words. Judge William Pauley concluded that Cohen's crimes were serious and implicated, quote, "insidious harm to our democratic institutions." In the Mueller case, Cohen pled guilty to lying to Congress about negotiations to build a Trump Tower in Moscow and about Trump's involvement during the campaign. Trump lied during his campaign, stating that he had no business dealings with Russia. But in fact, he was actively negotiating to build Trump Tower at the time in Moscow, the capital of Russia, and also reportedly offered a $50 million penthouse suite in the tower to Russian President Vladimir Putin. If true, that could be viewed as a bribe offered to a foreign official, a felony for any American corporation, business executive, or politician to do. Although Trump Tower in Moscow was never actually built, it's a crime to offer a bribe to a foreign official even if the payment is never made. New York Congressman Adam Schiff, who is expected to become chair of the House Intelligence Committee when Democrats retake the majority in January, has indicated that the proposed Trump-Putin business deal may also have swayed U.S. policy toward sanctioning Russia for its actions in Crimea. Schiff recently tweeted, "At the same time candidate Trump publicly urged sanctions relief for Russia, he was privately putting together a business deal in Moscow that required lifting U.S. sanctions. Then President Trump and his confederates misled the country about it in a way that left him compromised." In other words, the president was willing to put private financial gain and the interests of a foreign power ahead of U.S. national security interests, offering to eliminate sanctions in exchange for reaping huge private profits, and in doing so, opening himself up to possible blackmail by a hostile foreign power. Mueller's filings also indicate that Cohen provided credible information on multiple contacts between many Trump campaign officials and Russians related to influencing the outcome of the election. In the New York case, Cohen told federal prosecutors that Trump, during his 2016 campaign, ordered Cohen to pay hush money to porn star Stormy Daniels, who claims she had an affair with Trump, in order to influence the outcome of the election specifically, and also to pay off a former Playboy model, Karen McDougal, in 2016. Ordering a felony to be committed is also a felony. Trump and his team have denounced Cohen as weak and a liar. Trump's story changed, however, repeatedly regarding those payoffs. He first denied any knowledge of them and later admitted he knew of the hush money payments. More recently, he has argued that these should be considered personal expenses, not campaign expenses, as the government contends, and that these are not crimes. However, the actions are virtually identical to the crimes with which John Edwards, a former Democratic candidate who paid off a pregnant mistress to keep his affairs silent during his presidential campaign, was charged. Cohen pled guilty to crimes including lying to Congress, campaign finance violations, and tax evasion. He must also pay $1.5 million in restitution, in addition to serving those 3 years in prison. In a related case, American Media, publisher of the National Enquirer tabloid newspaper, has admitted that it, too, committed a felony by paying $150,000 to buy, but not publish, the story of that Playboy model. Quote, in order to ensure that the woman did not publicize damaging allegations about the candidate before the 2016 presidential election. Moreover, American Media has implicated Trump as being in the room when those discussions were taking place. The U.S. Attorney's Office announced that it will not prosecute American Media in exchange for the company's cooperation in the case. Also last week, The Washington Post reported that Maria Butina is pleading guilty to serving as a Kremlin agent or a spy in order to infiltrate the conservative movement in the United States, including the National Rifle Association, or NRA, meetings with wealthy Republican donors and political campaign operatives. Butina also set up a meeting between a top Russian emissary and Donald Trump Jr., the president's son. In a related twist, Robert Mueller has issued a court filing indicating that Trump's campaign manager Paul Manafort breached his plea deal by lying to the special prosecutor's team after he pled guilty of conspiracy against the United States and attempted witness tampering, CNN reports. The Hill reported that Manafort, who has close ties to Putin, allegedly lied about Manafort's contacts with Trump administration officials and his interactions with an associate who has suspected ties to Russian intelligence, as well as that associate's role in tampering with witnesses, among other things. Revelations that prosecutors believe the president committed at least one felony during his campaign and possibly additional crimes such as obstruction of justice after winning office or potentially even conspiracy with a foreign government to influence an election outcome have prompted debates among legal scholars over whether a sitting president can be indicted while in office. Experts disagree on that point, but generally agree that charges can be filed once Trump leaves office if the statute of limitations has not run. Trump could also be held accountable through impeachment by the House of Representatives in Congress, a possibility once Democrats take office in January. But it would take a two-thirds majority of senators to actually try and remove the president from office, a prospect that would require a significant number of Republican senators to vote for removal. Another prospect would be a behind-the-scenes effort by Republicans, as occurred during the Watergate scandal. Back then, when presented with evidence of Nixon's complicity in a cover-up of serious crimes and obstruction of justice, Republican leaders pressured Nixon to resign rather than face the scandal of impeachment. Significantly, last week, a bipartisan coalition of 45 former U.S. senators, many Republicans and Democrats, published a letter in the Washington Post noting that the Mueller investigation will soon wind up and House investigations will commence. The prominent former Republican and Democratic senators wrote, "At other critical moments in our history, when constitutional crises have threatened our foundations, it has been the Senate that has stood in defense of our democracy. Today is once again such a time. Regardless of party affiliation, ideological leanings, or geography, as former members of this great body, we urge current and future senators to be steadfast and zealous guardians of our democracy by ensuring that partisanship or self-interest not replace national interest."
Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, December 17, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Can the GOP muster the votes to avoid a government shutdown? Also on our Monday rundown, groups laud Zinke's departure, but worry about who's next, plus a call for review of Veterans Administration dog research. Topping our news, just days before a deadline to avert a partial government shutdown, President Trump, Democratic leaders, and the Republican-controlled Congress are at a stalemate over the president's treasured border wall. That according to the New York Times. They report Republican leaders are also confronting a more mundane and awkward problem. Their vanquished and retiring members are sick and tired of Washington and don't want to show up anymore to vote. The Times is calling it the revenge of the lame ducks. Many lawmakers relegated to cubicles as incoming members take their offices, having been skipping votes in the weeks since House Republicans were swept from their power in the midterm elections. Republican leaders are unsure whether they will ever return. Conservation groups welcomed the departure of Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, saying it could take years to reverse the damage to America's public lands during his time in office. Mark Richardson has our report.
President Donald Trump announced Saturday that the former Navy SEAL and Montana congressman will leave his post by the end of the year amid ethics charges involving business deals, policy decisions, and travel arrangements. Despite high hopes that as a Westerner, Zinke would be sensitive to public lands protections, Aaron Weiss with the Center for Western Priorities thinks he'll be remembered as the most harmful Interior Secretary for public lands in the nation's history.
Secretary Zinke focused on slashing Bear's Ears by three-quarters and Grand Staircase Escalante by half. And that's going to be the legacy that he leaves behind, is this attempt not to stand up and protect public lands, but to open them up to oil and gas drilling.
White House sources said he was forced out of the job. Zinke is the fourth Trump cabinet member to resign under a cloud of suspicion. The most serious of more than a dozen accusations involves a land deal with the chairman of oil services mega firm Halliburton in Zinke's hometown of Whitefish, Montana, now under investigation by the Justice Department.
The Denver-based Center for Western Priorities is a nonprofit group that advocates for balanced conservation and energy practices in the West.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. The city of El Cajon is developing a climate action plan aimed at establishing the city's sustainable strategies to help improve the quality of life in El Cajon. Sustainable strategies are activities that help preserve natural resources, reduce our carbon footprint, and make a better environment. Monica Zek, the city's public information officer, says, while everyone has different community roles as property owners, business owners, residents, government officials, and nonprofit organizations, each can do their part in improving El Cajon. Sustainable strategies might include using separate trash and recycle bins to ensure proper disposal of waste, installing photovoltaic panels to use a renewable energy source, carpooling with coworkers, or offering van pools to reduce air pollution, planting trees to produce clean oxygen, and upgrading to efficient fixtures for light and water to conserve resources. As the city continues the climate action planning process, it plans to feature community members who are already using sustainable strategies and in turn making El Cajon a better place to live, work, and visit. One of these is the El Cajon Collaborative, a nonprofit whose mission includes enhancing the quality of life for children, youths, and families. The collaborative operates out of Little House on Avocado Avenue in downtown El Cajon. They have an on-site recycling program, upgraded energy-efficient lighting fixtures, and a community garden that produces fresh food for seniors. They were recently awarded a community development block grant for installation of solar photovoltaic panels, drought-tolerant landscaping, and an efficient irrigation system. They're looking forward to the benefits and cost efficiencies and for the environment. If you're a business owner, property owner, resident, or a nonprofit organization interested in being featured in the City of El Cajon's Sustainable Strategies articles, you can contact 619-441-1742 or email planning@cityofelcajon.us. You can also keep up with the latest news on the city's Climate Action Plan, or CAP, development by visiting cityofelcajon.us/CAP.
Santee's Mast Park, the city's oldest and most used park, is getting a facelift that will retain some current features but also create some new amenities intended to make it even more family-friendly. Plans have been in the works since 2011 to renovate the nearly 50-year-old park, where city leaders and other government officials gathered on December 4th for a groundbreaking ceremony. Mayor John Minto said the lag time was due to the city's strategy of getting all the necessary funds in place before construction began. He says no local tax dollars or general fund money was used for the $11.7 million project, which was funded through fees paid by developers, some state and local grants, and the San Diego River Conservancy. The renovation will take about a year to complete, and the park will be closed until then. Upgrades include replacement of a basketball court, playground, restroom, and a 9-hole disc golf course. The renovation will create new trails for walkers and bicyclists, add a third picnic shelter, extra parking and lighting, and an enlarged dog walking area with 3 fields for large dogs, small dogs, and puppies. There will also be a new concession stand near a picnic area and the golf course. In addition, a total revamp of the park's landscaping will ultimately include over 7,000 different types of trees and plants. Most sycamore and oak trees will remain, but some large dead trees will be repurposed into an innovative stormwater drainage system to filter out debris that drains into the San Diego River when it rains. Terry Rogers, Santee Management Analyst, says, "We're trying to protect the river from trash and pollution while enhancing the park's amenities at the same time." The park renovation will also create much better trails that parallel the river and connect with other key river enhancement projects on either side of Santee and Lakeside to the east and San Diego to the west. Councilman Stephen Houlihan says he's overjoyed at the renovation, adding, "This is the reason I got on the council, to see projects like this one go through." Mast Park is part of a 52-mile trail system that makes up the San Diego River Park, stretching from Julian in the Cuyamaca Mountains all the way to Ocean Beach. The state has been working with cities and counties where the river flows, providing some of the money for improvements, and the county of San Diego also assisted in funding. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Miriam Raftery.
Demand for clean energy is on the rise as California forges a path towards 100% renewable energy sources. But some clean energy sources are having negative impacts on neighboring communities. Rural residents spoke out at a Boulevard Planning Group meeting in November to voice concerns about impacts of wind turbines near their homes. The turbines are in the newly installed Tule Wind Project in McCain Valley and at the Kumeyaay Wind Facility in Campo. The problems include noise and vibrations from the large wind turbines, as well as interference in cell phone service, a vital concern in an area prone to wildfires where communications is critical. Jeff Morrison of Boulevard said he complained to Verizon about cell phone problems since the wind turbines went in. He said the company sent out an engineer who blamed the cell phone service issues on the wind turbines, since Morrison previously had good service, and the turbines are the only new source of electromagnetic interference. Ken Dauback said he, too, has complained to Verizon and was told that EMI interference from wind turbines could be the cause. Morrison said his family is unable to open their windows due to loud swooshing sounds of blades and a high-pitched squealing sound. He also reports vibrations felt when standing on the ground at their home. Other residents also complained of noise issues. Morrison said he's seen a record 11 snakes on his front porch and a huge increase in rodents, which he believes could be caused by the animals seeking to flee the noise and vibrations. Dauback similarly reported an increase of rodents in his yard, as well as some floating dead in a horse trough. He wonders if turbines killed off birds of prey that prey on rodents. Chair Donna Tisdale voiced frustration that she has been unable to find the current owner of the Kumeyaay wind turbines, with websites leading to dead ends. The planning group in Boulevard has long opposed these projects, but has only advisory abilities. State, federal, county, and tribal authorities ultimately approved the numerous wind projects in the area. Tisdale also voiced disappointment that her planning group's request for the county to conduct a health impact assessment on wind turbines in rural East County has been denied by Mark Wardlaw at the county's Planning and Development Services Department. His letter states that health impacts will be studied at the Torrey Wind Environmental Impact Review, but Tisdale said the health impact assessment should be separate. She also disagreed with Wardlaw's contention that the county only needs to study the part of the project in county jurisdiction, omitting the majority of the turbines. Tisdale contends that the entire project should have impacts analyzed to be compliant with the National Environmental Policy Act and California Environmental Quality Act. The Boulevard Planning Group voted unanimously to send a letter in response to Wardlaw. Meanwhile, yet more wind turbines may soon be coming to the area at Tule Wind Phase 2, where 24 turbines are slated at the north end pending clearance by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. In addition, the Campo Indian Tribe is proposing a new Campo wind project atop most ridge lines on the reservation, from the Mexican border to north of Interstate 8. The tribe wants to build 60 wind turbines, each generating 4 megawatts of electricity. These are not the quaint windmills, long found in the rural region. The new wind turbines would each measure up to 586 feet high, taller than the tallest skyscraper in downtown San Diego. Neighbors and the Boulevard Planning Group have raised concerns over the potential impacts of yet more large wind turbines, including noise, sleep disruption, health impacts, reduced property values, and loss of the community's rural character. Written comments on the Campo Wind Project's environmental statement can be submitted through December 21st. You can find details at campowind.com. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with a Crime Beat report. Authorities are searching for suspects in two robberies in Lemon Grove, including one in which the victim was shot. On December 5th, a man with a white bandana covering his face jumped over the counter of the Jack in the Box restaurant on Broadway at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and pointed a pistol at both customers and employees. He took cash from the cash drawer and fled in a cream-colored sedan with tinted black windows. The suspect is described as African-American, approximately 6 feet 3 inches in height, with a medium to heavy build. He was wearing a baseball cap, red flannel shirt, gray hooded sweatshirt, black gloves, and white bandana. 1 week earlier, a 62-year-old man was shot by a masked robber outside an ATM machine at Union Bank on Lemon Grove Avenue. The victim was seated in his parked car when a man wearing a hat, sunglasses, an orange shirt, and a bandana covering his face pointed a semi-automatic handgun at him and demanded money. The suspect stole the victim's cell phone and then shot him in the leg. The shooter ran northbound on Lemon Grove Avenue in a small black crossover SUV. The victim's injury is not believed to be life-threatening. If you have information on either of these crimes, please call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information leading to a felony arrest.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all across East County, not a creature was stirring from Julian to El Monte. The stockings were hung by the chimneys with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
From Barona to Ramona, Hakumba to Hamul, East County residents will soon celebrate the Yule. From smartphones and iPads amid holiday dishes, our readers have sent Santa their holiday wishes.
Out in Borrego, where the waters run low, the town wants a deluge of rainfall to flow. In gridlocked Santee, residents ask Santa to please bring some new lanes for State Route 52.
Lemon Grove City Council is asking Chris Kringle to bring in new businesses and make cash registers jingle. Over in El Cajon, loyal arts fans are hoping the Performing Arts Center soon will reopen.
Meanwhile, in Lakeside, residents ask help divine to stop El Monte Valley from becoming a sand mine. In La Mesa's downtown, where a farmer's market's begun, merchants want more shoppers and diners to come.
Alpine fire survivors need to rebuild from ash, so they're asking for stockings to be filled with some cash. Rural ratepayers want utility bills, please, to go down. Descanso just wants power to stay on in their town.
Out at Cottonwood Golf Course on the 18th hole, neighbors ask Santa to leave a lump of coal for the course's new owner who wants to mine sand, harming wildlife in a preserve on neighboring land.
Out in the vineyards from valleys to mountaintops, winery owners ask Santa for bountiful crops. On Mount Helix, a parole office is proposed near a school. Neighbors want the project stopped for their Yule.
At East County's Native American reservations, tribes seek good fortune for all sovereign nations. As Sequan's new hotel opening date draws near, the tribe hopes the new year brings plenty of cheer.
With political changes now sweeping the nation, local officials want bipartisan cooperation. Congressman Hunter, snuggled in his bed, has visions of acquittal dancing in his head.
Like Bethlehem immigrants from far away, migrants at our border have no place to stay. They hope for asylum to start a new life in the United States, free from fear and from strife.
Local migrants from Mexico and the Mideast want Santa to please bring our planet world peace. East County's homeless want a safe place to sleep. Desert Park Rangers seek more bighorn sheep.
Julian's farmers want more apples to grow, so all the town's pie makers will be rolling in dough. Julian residents ask in their letter to Santa, please save our fire department before the next Santa Ana.
Cal Fire crews have sent this refrain, can Santa please give us lots of rain? Atop Mount Laguna, lodge guests in nightcaps had just settled down for long winter's nap.
When out o'er the lodge there arose such a clatter, they sprang from their beds to see what was the matter. Away to the windows they flew like a flash, jumped on e-scooters, and out they did dash.
The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to their wondering eyes should appear but a magical sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer.
With a little old driver so lively and quick, they knew in a moment it must be Saint Nick. Beside golden eagles his reindeer they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the mountain, then the new border wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
As dry leaves that before Santa Ana winds fly, when they meet with a wind turbine mount to the sky. So up to Mount Laguna the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too.
And then in a twinkling guests heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As they texted the good news and were turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound.
He was dressed in faux fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with wildfire soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a backpacker opening his pack.
His eyes how they twinkled, his dimples how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow.
A hemp pipe, now legal, he held tight in his teeth, and its smoke encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like Julian apple jelly.
He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elfie, so guests laughed when they saw him, and some took a selfie. A wink of his eye and a red cowboy hat on his head soon gave all to know they had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a twerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose.
He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like a swift SpaceX missile. But all heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, Merry Christmas, East County, and to all a good night.
Ho, ho, ho.
And we're going to end our show today with a special performance of Vivaldi's Gloria, performed by the amazing San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra.
Thank you. Cum sanctus spiritus.